You're listening to the Libertarian Party of Indiana podcast, where we talk to the individuals that help move our party forward. I'm your host, Executive Director Chris Spengel. You can hear all of our podcasts at podcast.lpin.org, or you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Financial support for this podcast comes from the 1994 Society. The 1994 Society is made up of grassroots libertarians like yourself that donate monthly to the Libertarian Party of Indiana. To join, please go to lpin.org/join. We thank you for your continued support. Welcome to the Libertarian Party of Indiana podcast. I'm your host, Executive Director Chris Spengel. Thank you for joining us. And with us today is 2nd Congressional District candidate Joe Ruiz. Joe, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Thanks for coming all the way down to Indianapolis and talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So what brings you to town today, actually?
We were doing an interview with the Indy Star at 10 o'clock this morning. It went really well.
Very cool.
Very, very happy with how it turned out. So that's why we're down.
What are some of the questions that they ask in some of those interviews?
My favorite kind of came when they asked me about my work with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, since you've been working with kids for such a long time and you consider that maybe that agency has taken some state money from time to time, how would those kids be taken care of if we were in a more simplified government? And how can you be certain that they would not just kind of fall by the wayside? And I said, well, because there's people like me. I work with them day in and day out right now, and it's not because there's state money being funneled into this agency. It's because I care, and if the agency went away, I'd still be doing whatever I could in the community to help people like that.
Yeah, I think, and that seems to be the most asked question when I talk to reporters, is what would happen to the people who can't take care of themselves?
Mm-hmm.
That always seems to be a stumbling block for reporters because they just assume that people will not be taken care of. And I think yourself and our gubernatorial candidate Rupert with Rupert's kids are two mm-hmm. great examples of people who will, you know, who really don't use state money but will go at, you know, Rupert hasn't taken any state money or federal money mm-hmm. to support his program. And, you know, he's still there because he has a heart for kids.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I find myself in a really unique position with the kids that I work with. You really grow fond of them. And for all of their faults and any imperfections that they might have, I find myself just going out of my way to spend more time with them. You just, you know, you grow a heart for kids like that.
Mm-hmm.
And from the other side, they grow a heart for you. And
sure.
when you build those relationships, you just want to make sure that they're taken care of.
Where do you work at?
I work at the Family and Children's Center in Mishawaka, Indiana.
So what's your description of what do you do every single day
well,
in and day out?
We have kind of funny job titles, but the long and short of it is I get to spend time in a residential setting with a group of kids who are there for various reasons, be it mental or behavioral issues, substance abuse, and different things. A lot of times just people who have come from kind of tough backgrounds, or maybe families weren't really prepared to tackle parenthood and they're still trying to learn how to do the best job that they can do. And we give them some help with that. And in the process, I get to build relationship with some really cool kids.
So how has that job sort of prepared you for not only your run for Congress, but ultimately, you know, a win in Congress and acting as a congressman?
When I first started working at the Family and Children's Center in 2006, I was very uncertain about how it would turn out. I told myself initially, this is just going to be a temporary job. I don't know that I'll have the patience to continue doing this for a really long period of time. And here, almost 7 years later, I realized that I just had this care for people that I didn't quite realize that I had prior to getting started there. And that care for people has developed into pursuing this political run. And I think that is probably my biggest strength in the campaign, is that I'm still putting 40-plus hours in to working with these kids and with these families during the week. And I think people are going to see that I'm closer to the people, that I'm using my personal time not to just campaign to the people, but to work with and be with the people. And that's something that neither of my opponents can claim.
Tell us a little bit about yourself outside of just your job and your race. Are you married? Do you have kids? What's sort of, you know, what do you enjoy doing outside of work and politics?
I am married, and I have two children, one of them who is going to be 1 year old here in a few days on the 23rd. His name is Jensen. He's a cool little guy. And then I have a three-year-old daughter who just started preschool. Her name is Cameron. And my wife's name is Mickey, and she's also in social work, and she works as a case manager for the same agency. And so she goes from house to house, and she works with the families on various things. As far as fun and the things on my free time, I'm just kind of a convivial person, and I appreciate the arts, and I appreciate music of all kinds, and just being entertained, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably spend a little bit more time on Facebook than I should, just like most people nowadays, yep. You know, because that in itself can be entertaining.
Absolutely. Yeah, you get a nice fun thread going and, you know, go back and forth for hours.
Absolutely.
So, especially if you can mock your friends or coworkers.
Yeah.
So, what are your top three issues in this campaign? What are the top three things that you find yourself talking about most and that you really want to get across to voters?
Well, I find myself talking about my position in the community a lot regarding my work. And, you know, we already talked about that. But I think that's big. I think it resonates with people because a lot of times I think real people don't even necessarily think too much about the issues at hand. I think they just want to feel like they're listened to, mm-hmm. and I feel like they want to feel cared about, and they want to know that whoever's getting in there, it doesn't matter what party they're from, they're going to be represented as best as possible. And so I talk about my standing with the community because I think it sets a clear distinction between myself, Brendan Mullen, and Jackie Walorski, who are my Republican and Democratic opponents. Secondly, I talk about the economy, I talk about jobs, and in terms of what the free market and what that means exactly, what all that encapsulates. And that can be kind of challenging because what you're doing in that context is telling people we need to do exactly opposite of what's being done now. And so sometimes people can have a hard time seeing exactly what that would be. However, I then talk about government transparency. Government transparency kind of engulfs everything.
Sure.
Because, and this is something that the people can really connect to and know whether candidates are really talking about it in my district. You know, we've got two people for the machines that are currently running Washington, and they're running, and they don't say anything about the system. They talk about the policies, but they don't say anything about the system. And as far as I'm concerned, the system is broken because it is secretive. And it doesn't represent the people. And even if it were representing the people, we don't really have a way of knowing that because we don't get to see what happens. We don't get to see what goes on. And there's only a few people out there that I can think of that are really accountable, and they tell people why they vote the way they vote. And it's they go out of their way to make sure that the people can hold them accountable as their representative. That's the kind of representative that I want to be. And so when I let people in on the fact that government transparency, whether it's auditing the Fed or any other federal agency or whatever, when they see that I'm someone who's not into secrets, not into playing games, I think they respect that.
Mm-hmm. What is the thing that concerns you most about the future of our country?
Well, as I said, I'm a father of two children, so the idea that they won't grow up in a free society troubles me. The idea that there's, you know, constantly limitations on how they'll be able to become successful. And I just want to hopefully make some changes and open some doors so that they have not just the opportunities that I had growing up, but more.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, and I've often said this, libertarians are heavy on change but little on hope. So what is the thing in America that makes you the most hopeful right now?
Because I see change. I see change every day. We don't get to see Washington change very often. And in fact, we see a slow progression towards it getting worse. But I work with kids, and I get to see how you can take something that was that once had little hope, and you can instill some hope inside of it, and you can see positive changes that are going to, you know, put someone out in the community and have his or her life change forever. And they're going to be able to make, hopefully, the same kind of impacts or contributions or even more so than what I'm trying to make.
You're running in a district with a Tea Party favorite. Jackie Walorski is usually in like the top five or top 10 of favorite congressional candidates sponsored by the Tea Party around the nation. And a lot of that is her social conservatism. What are your views on social conservatism and, you know, religion's role in government and, you know, some of the social issues like gay marriage and abortion?
I just don't think it's something for the federal government to really involve themselves in personally. And I realize that she's a favorite because of some of that social stuff. But my impression of the Tea Party when it initially got started was that it was more about economically focused issues. And so Jackie, while she might be a Tea Party favorite, and I don't say this as any indicator of her personal character necessarily, but I will say that she talked a lot about the Tea Party at first, and she really catered to that crowd. And now she's aiming in her new commercials about bipartisanship. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I know a lot of people were upset and threw Dick Lugar out about. So what kind of, you know, as a candidate, you have a choice in terms of marketability. How are you presenting yourself to the people in your community? Her image is changing. And so I don't know if she'll be a Tea Party favorite for long, because the Tea Party wants consistency. The Tea Party wants someone who's going to believe in a simplified government and who is going to show that. And they don't have to be a socially conservative person. They just have to be someone who's willing to say, let's have the government on the lowest level possible, whether that be in terms of spending or any of these other civil liberties or anything else. And I am the candidate who is willing to do that. And I think that I hopefully can fill that role soon.
So you have two opponents that I would assume are pretty well financially backed. How do you compete? What are some of the things that you do as a libertarian candidate to set yourself apart when you're outspent significantly?
Having a lot of money definitely gives you resources in terms of campaigning. I know that I would be better at the job that we're trying to get than Jackie and Brendan, because I know the way that I would vote. I know that I would vote on principle. However, campaigning is kind of a different beast. You know, it's very self-promotional. And so having a lot of money can give you the resources to kind of gain name recognition and get your voice heard and other things. But I think that there's another side of it to which people see rich politicians all the time, and it's becoming less and less impressive as people find themselves financially lacking. And so what I do as a candidate, whether or not I can compete with them financially, is make up for it with sincerity.
I think one of the things that helps libertarians especially is the internet. It gives us, you know, an avenue. And you look at the growth of the Libertarian Party for 30 years, they grew, but not exponentially. And now if you look at the exposure to libertarians in the last 10 years, because of the internet, it's, you know, it's been significant.
Sure, and we utilize the internet quite a bit. Social networking is a way to get our voices out, because, you know, people can periodically see interviews or listen to interviews such as this, or see things in the newspaper, but those things only come along every once in a while, whereas social networking, we can update our supporters every day as many times as we need to.
Sure.
And I think that's important, because anybody who is willing to pay some attention or listen to what you have to say or follow you or whatever, you know, they're going to stay up and they're going to know that you're out there pursuing things in the best way that you can.
This is our second interview with you. We did an interview right at the beginning of your candidacy, and I don't even know when that interview, whenever it was posted, maybe March, April?
I don't remember.
if you could go back and tell yourself something, what have you learned between then and now? I mean, about campaigning, what advice would you give yourself now that we're sort of in the home stretch?
What advice would I give myself during that interview?
Well, not about that interview, because, you know, but if you, through this experience as a first-time candidate, what are some of the things that you know now that you wish you had known when you started?
Oh, well, I mean, it's all been a learning experience. I don't know what things jump out at me significantly. I would just say, be prepared. You're going to get very, very busy. Mm-hmm. And I have, because when you take into consideration that my wife and I work full-time jobs, we both are students, we, you know, raise two children, young children who are kind of, like I said, my daughter's starting school, and then at the same time, I'm trying to run a congressional campaign. My wife's doing internship hours.
It's Thursday in the middle of the week, and you're in Indianapolis, and,
uh-huh.
You know.
Uh-huh, yeah, and I've got two more interviews coming up this week, and, you know, some Meet the Candidate nights coming up, and all that has to be kind of fitted into a very busy schedule, a schedule that's already very busy, mm-hmm. without the political stuff that we're doing. And so it would be, if I could give myself some advice, it would be love your wife as much as possible and let her know how much you care about her, because you spend a significant time out campaigning, and she ends up watching the kids by herself sometimes while I'm out doing some of these things, and I wish I could be there more. She's been very understanding, very kind, but it takes a toll on one's family that I think has to be respected.
Yeah. I as the executive director of the party, for the last 4 years, every spring and fall, I go through this, you know, where you've got to kind of, you've got to build up that time, and then you get to the state fair where you're out at the state fair every single day for 17 days, and you're gone, and you see her when she's asleep, and you're asleep. And so, yeah, I understand that all too well. So November and December, you're trying to make up for all the time that you missed. Yeah, campaigning I don't think is as easy as people think. I think, you know, oh, well, I'll put my name on the ballot and it'll be kind of easy, but most people, they start to realize the responsibility of getting out there, spreading the libertarian message, and it's tough.
You could do that. You could essentially put your name on the ballot and that's it. But I think that if you're serious enough about actually putting your name on the ballot and putting yourself out there, then you need to also take into consideration that you kind of have an obligation to the people who have an opportunity to vote for you, to show them what you're about. And that means you got to get yourself out there as much as possible so that they understand that you're a person who's worthwhile.
Yeah. So when you go out and do these interviews and you talk about the libertarian message in a brief statement, your elevator pitch, what is a libertarian? What do you say to interviewers when they ask that question, what is a libertarian?
A libertarian is personable. A libertarian is someone who cares about people without requiring someone else to care for them. And that's what I do.
Okay. And how did you become a libertarian? How did you find out about the party, and what drew you to the libertarian philosophy?
I started primarily because I voted. Kind of, I don't know if I could say this on libertarian air, but I voted for Obama back in 2008. I know. And I had no idea about the Libertarian Party or anything at that point in time. But I just, there came a period shortly after his election when I became very discouraged. And I almost immediately got this sense of, oh boy, he's not going to do the things that he said he was going to do while he was campaigning. And, you know, and I wasn't a fan of everything originally, but he did talk about transparency. He did talk about not unilaterally making military decisions and various things. And that was important to me. And I voted for him based on those things. And when I got that sense of he's not going to do this, I thought, I felt a little bit trapped. And I kind of got disenchanted for a while, and then picked up some books and just started doing some independent reading when it came around to election time. And the ideas that were coming across in some of these libertarian books that I was reading, I'd never heard before, I never considered before, and I became a tad fascinated. And I read like every book that I could read cover to cover, and then I kind of made another plan for myself. I said, I'm going to attend a Tea Party meeting and a Libertarian Party meeting. I did both. The Tea Party meeting that I went to, God bless those people, they were not so kind to libertarians. And I initially thought that the Libertarian Party and the Tea Party would work really well together because I thought that they would be more economically focused. This particular meeting, the one thing I heard was, oh, libertarians, if we put them in charge, then everybody would just be on drugs. And I was just really discouraged by that comment. And
everybody's already on drugs. We're not in charge.
I was so discouraged by that comment I emailed the guy and I said, hey, you know, I'd really like to talk about that position or that statement a little bit more because, you know, I consider myself to be more of a libertarian now and I'd love to keep attending, but I think that that kind of comment needs to be corrected. And he never responded to me. Sure. So I stopped going back to the Tea Party group and attended the St. Joe County Libertarian Party meeting. And it was a small group that has now grown over time. And it's been fantastic.
And led by Ron Sinkush, who is the county chair there, and the Gary Johnson for Indiana State Director, and Rocco, the treasurer, Richard Johnson. A lot of great people up in St. Joe County and Elkhart and that area.
Absolutely. I've made some really fantastic friends and great support system.
And you were actually on the State Central Committee in the 2nd District. So whenever we get a Central Committee member on the podcast, I always like for them to explain what that is, and sometimes they can answer it because it's in the Libertarian Party, there aren't many defined roles. It's like, you want to be a leader? All right, lead. Let's kind of define what that is, and then also give us your view for the Libertarian Party of Indiana as a whole, and how do you think we proceed in the next year after this, you know, explosive election for us?
Well, the State Central Committee, my impression of it, I'm still really new to it. So I haven't maybe got a full feel for it. And then campaigning, like I said, amongst all the other things, I think that because the meetings have only been periodic, I haven't paid as much attention as I probably need to. But in looking at the posts on Facebook, they seem to just be a support system. They handle some of the business decisions and everything, and they want to make sure that the candidates that are representing the LPIN are the best candidates possible. And they do whatever they can once they find those candidates to support them. And so I've been in a little bit of a dual role.
Right.
And, you know, up in Northwest Indiana, it's not as busy. We're a little bit isolated up there because a lot of the action's kind of in central Indiana and whatnot. So being the SEC rep and also being the candidate, I've done that by supporting myself and being the best candidate that I can try and be.
For transparency, we make him sit out on votes regarding himself, which there have been none, so that's a joke.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've still got some things to see and to learn, and I look forward to the future.
And that has always been one of the struggles for both the Evansville area and for the Louisville area and for Northern Indiana, the region, as you folks call it. You know, so much goes on in the center of the state because this is where a third of the population of the state is. It's very compact. It's where the state office is, where the executive director is. So it's easier for me to get out and cheerlead a little bit and encourage, and I can talk to more candidates. And it's just it's a more concentrated region. Plus, we're all on the same media market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then in your area, you're on the Chicago media market, or, you know, in St. Joe County, you're split between, you know, Michigan and the Chicago media market and your own media market. And so it's sort of, talk about the difficulties of organizing a county party or a campaign in a region where it is more difficult to get Indiana-focused news and connections made in that area.
I think one of the hardest things that we've found in, as far as campaign and community organization is that we live in a town full of students.
Right.
We have Bethel College, we have St. Mary's, Holy Cross, Notre Dame, IUSB, and so many of these people are not residents in our district, are not residents in our county. They're there for school, and then they leave, and they go back to wherever they come from, which means that they're not really putting down any roots regarding a political party. They're not really putting down roots with a candidate because that's not who they're going to be able to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a challenge, but we are doing our best to get our voice out to the locals, throw events, fundraisers, and different things that'll draw people in, even if it's something really non-threatening, like we just held a big yard sale, just to get people out to buy stuff. It served the dual purpose of getting money for the county party, and then also, you know, if somebody was willing to talk, we had Gary Johnson signs out, and we had my stuff out, and we had some just Libertarian Party literature out. So if anyone had any questions, then that was a non-threatening way of us to just have a conversation with somebody. And hopefully that kind of care and concern will grow the party a little.
Before we wrap up the podcast, what is the one thing that you might not have talked about or that you might want to repeat that you want listeners to our Libertarian podcast, mostly a Libertarian-focused audience, what is the one thing you want them to know before we wrap up?
I like to reiterate that I would be the best person for the job in my campaign. There's concern and there's doubt in my mind that either Brennan Mullen or Jackie Walorski would handle things, at least from a Libertarian point of view, and I have a pretty good feeling that they would continue on with the same kind of blind partisanship that's currently going on in Washington, and I don't want to see that happen. So I would just advise that you please spread the word, help spread the word about our campaign and our website, www.joeruiz.com, and just get the word out so that people can see what I see and what the people who are supporting us so far see. And hopefully we can make as big of an impact as possible in this race and hope to win.
So how can people contact you again? How can they get a hold of you?
They can contact us at our website, www.joeruiz.com. My email is joe@joeruiz.com. Or they can like our campaign page on Facebook, facebook.com/joeruizforcongress, or follow us on Twitter.
R-U-I-Z, by the way.
R-U-I-Z.
Yep. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking the time to come and sit and talk with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Libertarian Party of Indiana podcast. For more information, please visit us at lpin.org. Our music has been provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. To hear more of his music, please visit briankeithwallen.com or find him on Facebook. Thank you for listening.